Okay, so picture this. You are standing in the back of a crowded, dimly lit sports bar on a Friday night.
Oh man, I can already smell the stale beer.
Right. The energy in the room is just, it's absolutely thick. You've got 50, maybe 60 people packed in, shoulder to shoulder, drinks in hand, and every single one of them is staring at the blank screens above the bar.
Worst feeling.
The absolute worst, because the big game, the one they all, paid a cover charge for and bought three rounds of beers to watch, it's supposed to start in exactly 2 minutes. And you look over at the bartender,
Sweating bullets.
literally sweating through their shirt. And it's not from mixing margaritas or tapping kegs, right? It's because they're frantically clicking through a literal plastic basket of five different sticky remotes.
Oh, the sticky remotes, the Roku, the Apple TV, the random cable box.
Yeah, they are navigating this chaotic, unforgiving sea of streaming subscriptions, wrong HDMI inputs, spinning buffering wheels, random password prompts. They're just praying they can find the right channel before the entire bar turns on them and starts booing.
It is honestly a terrifying scenario if you are operating a hospitality business.
Yeah.
I mean, you are watching the modern version of a high wire act performed by a bartender who has zero technical training.
Zero.
And there is absolutely no safety net. You've got thirsty, anxious fans, and the only thing standing between a massively profitable night and a total reputational disaster is a maze of digital fragmentation. And if they click the wrong button, the screen goes black and the money just, walks right out the door.
It walks out. So, Ryan, that sweating bartender is your entire market. And saving that bartender is your mission. Welcome to your deep dive.
Welcome, Ryan.
Today, we are not broadcasting to the public. We are speaking directly to you, Ryan Blood, Chief Content Officer at Everpass Media. Consider us your strategic coaches for the next hour.
That's right.
We are here to synthesize and really rehearse your highly confidential internal strategy playbook ahead of your major panel at the Stream TV Show 2026 in Denver. Your panel is called The New Live Sports Rights Playbook: Dealmaking for the Future of Fandom.
Catchy title.
Very catchy. Now, my role today is your strategic coach. I'm framing your narrative. And sitting across from me is your skeptical moderator, throwing the absolute hardest pitches you are going to face under those stage lights.
Yeah, and look, let me be clear about my role here, Ryan. I am not going to throw you softballs.
Okay.
The crowd in Denver, they are savvy. You've got media executives, legacy broadcasters, really aggressive tech innovators.
They know the game.
They do. They want to know if Everpass is just, a flash in the pan or the actual architect of a new era. So we are going to rehearse this document. We're going to tee up the hardest likely questions, deliver the exact lines you need to say word for word, and break down why they land. And importantly, when you need to simply stop talking and let the silence do the work.
Yes, the silence is key. So let's dive in. We are going to center this entire prep session on your specific career arc. That is the spine of this playbook, and frankly, it needs to be the spine of your presence on that stage.
100%.
The living room streaming wars, your Netflix, Amazon, Disney, that is a saturated bloodbath. But the commercial out-of-home venue, the bars, the casinos, the hotel lobbies, that is a multi-billion-dollar battlefield hiding in plain sight.
And it is going through a massive structural earthquake right now.
Exactly. And the reason you, Ryan, are the one holding the microphone in Denver is because you have navigated this ecosystem from three distinct vantage points across 2 decades. The playbook calls it sitting in the three chairs.
I love that framing, the three chairs. That concept is your ultimate armor out there. We need to open your panel by establishing those three chairs. Because look, most executives in that room have spent their entire careers on one side of the negotiating table.
Right, they only know one thing.
They know one flavor of leverage. You need to remind them, subtly but firmly, that you have held the pen on every side of the deal. So let's break down the first chair. You started in the buyer's seat at DirecTV. This was the undisputed golden age of the satellite dish.
Yeah, let's talk about that buyer's seat. Because when you sit there at a massive distributor, your worldview is entirely defined by content valuation and defensive spending. Ryan, think back to those boardrooms in the early 2000s. You were looking at regional sports networks, massive leagues, emerging channels.
And your entire job was to decide, does this actually matter?
Exactly. Does this property actually move the needle for our subscriber base? You were the gatekeeper. That seat taught you the absolute ruthless discipline of figuring out what a distributor is actually willing to pay for versus what is just, you know, vanity programming.
Which is an incredibly specific psychology. When you are the buyer, your absolute deepest fear is overpaying for a massive rights package that doesn't actually reduce your churn rate or acquire new customers.
You fear the deadweight contract.
Right, yeah. Deadweight. And then you shift it to the second chair, the platform seat. You spend 6 years running global distribution at Disney. Suddenly, you aren't the gatekeeper anymore. You are the one knocking on the gates.
Begging to be let in.
Right, trying to get Disney's massive portfolio of content distributed across every conceivable platform around the planet. Cable, virtual MVPDs, direct-to-consumer apps, global app stores.
And you did this during arguably the most chaotic transitional period in media history, right? The great migration from linear cable to the streaming ecosystem. You had to learn the granular mechanics of how IP travels across borders, how to negotiate with Apple and Roku.
Oh yeah, those negotiations are brutal.
Brutal. And how to structure a deal that doesn't just work on a set-top box, but works on an iPad, a smart TV, and whatever device comes out 3 years from now.
That brings up a critical point you really must emphasize on stage, Ryan. In the Disney platform seat, the fear fundamentally changes. You are no longer afraid of overpaying. You are terrified of your content getting technologically stranded.
Yes, technologically stranded.
You are terrified of signing a 5-year distribution deal that gets rendered completely obsolete in 18 months because the consumer hardware shifted. You had to learn how to write flexible, future-proof paper.
Which brings us to the third chair, the one you are sitting in today, the principal seat at Everpass. You aren't just buying for a legacy hardware company anymore, and you aren't just distributing for a legacy studio. You are the principal architect building these deals from the ground up for an entirely new cloud-based commercial platform.
It's a totally different ballgame.
It is. The playbook notes you executed over 20 content and distribution transactions in just 12 months. I mean, that's insane pace. You synthesized the buyer's fear of deadweight with the platform's fear of obsolescence, and you built a model that mitigates both.
Okay, Ryan, so let's role play this. When you get the opening question in Denver, and it's likely going to be a broad sweeping prompt from the moderator asking about the chaos of the current sports landscape, this is where you plant your flag.
You don't talk about tech here?
No, absolutely not. You do not start by talking about Everpass's tech stack. You start with the three chairs. I want to coach you on the exact delivery here. You say this plainly, almost as a throwaway line. No dollar figures, no senior vice president titles. The understatement is the flex.
So what's the line?
The recurring refrain you want to brand into the audience's brain is this. You pause, look right at the moderator, and say, the seat changes, the leverage changes, the tactics change every cycle. The fundamentals carry.
The fundamentals carry. I love that. But look, let me push back on that, playing the role of a skeptical audience member, because if I'm sitting in the front row in Denver, I am thinking, Ryan, that sounds like a great philosophical soundbite, but it's 2026. A satellite television deal you negotiated in 2005 cannot possibly rely on the same fundamentals as a cloud-based broadband streaming deal today. The internet rewired the entire galaxy. You can't tell me the fundamentals haven't changed.
How do you defend that? That's the first trap they will set for you. They want you to sound like a legacy executive clinging to the past.
Right.
Your counter is that the fundamentals are not the technical specifications. The fundamentals are the human psychology of risk and adaptability. You learn this at Disney. You do not contract for predictions.
Wait, say that again, because that's huge.
You do not contract for predictions. You cannot sit in a boardroom today and accurately spec out what a streaming product will look like in 2031. Technology moves too aggressively. Instead, you contract for adaptability.
Yes, and this is where you explain the concept of device agnostic definitions. I want you to break this down for the room so even the non-lawyers understand it, Ryan. Instead of writing a contract that says, this live sports feed will be delivered via an MPEG-4 stream to a proprietary set-top box with these exact dimensions, you write definitions that allow the rights to organically travel to whatever display hardware the market adopts next.
You build in review triggers based on market shifts rather than rigid technical milestones.
Yeah.
Your edge, Ryan, is that you know exactly where the executives across the table feel vulnerable because you have literally occupied their office. When a league is nervous about moving their commercial rights to streaming, you look them in the eye and say, I ran global distribution at Disney. I know what it feels like to fear a platform shift. Here's how we wrote the paper to protect our IP. And here is how I am going to write the paper to protect yours.
Man, that is powerful.
That is the power of the three chairs. You use your PAT as the evidence behind every single term sheet.
Okay, let's transition into the actual product execution, because this is where the theory hits the incredibly messy reality of the hospitality industry. I want to talk about the Great Migration.
The big one.
Yeah, this is the first specific prompt pointed at you by name in the playbook, the build fast and migration question. For 30 straight years, out-of-home sports, I mean, every single casino sports book, every local dive bar, every massive hotel chain ran on the satellite dish. It was hardwired into the ceiling. It was the absolute gold standard.
It was a physical monolith. I mean, think about the old days. If you wanted Sunday Ticket, you called DirecTV, you waited 2 weeks, a guy in a truck showed up. He drilled literal holes into your roof. He ran heavy coaxial cables through the walls. He bolted a dish facing the southern sky, and he hooked it up to a clunky metal box behind the bar.
Massive pain.
Is an enormous physical friction point. But to their credit, once it was there, it worked.
It worked. But the new model runs on broadband. You are ripping out the coaxial cable and replacing it with Wi-Fi and Ethernet. Ryan, your mandate at Everpass was bordering on the impossible. You had to build a robust, enterprise-grade streaming platform from scratch and migrate tens of thousands of B2B venues off of this legacy satellite system on a ticking clock without a single venue missing a Sunday game.
And they will ask you about this. The moderator in Denver is going to ask you how you survived that operational nightmare. They're going to want to talk about user interfaces and software engineering. I need you to anchor your answer firmly to the DirecTV buyer's seat.
Go back to the first chair.
Always. You learned as a buyer that in the commercial space, bells and whistles do not matter if the feed drops. The phrase you use here, and Ryan, you pause right before you say it to ensure the room is listening, is reliability before features.
Let's spend real time unpacking that, because it sounds simple, but it is deeply contrarian in Silicon Valley. Tech companies usually launch an MVP, a minimum viable product with a bunch of cool features, and they figure, we'll patch the bugs later.
Move fast and break things.
Right. But if Netflix buffers for 10 seconds in your living room, it's annoying, but you just wait. You check your phone. If a live stream buffers for 10 seconds during a penalty kick in a packed Irish pub, the bartender is getting screamed at, drinks are getting spilled, the venue is actively losing money. Uptime isn't a feature. Uptime is the entire business model.
That is exactly the distinction. In the commercial B2B space, one bad Sunday costs you more trust than 10 missing features. You didn't care if the Everpass UI looked a little plain on day one. You didn't care if there weren't fancy interactive betting stats floating on the screen.
None of that mattered.
You cared that when a sports bar in Chicago hit play on a Bears game, that stream was completely bulletproof. The bells and whistles can come in version 2.0. The migration itself is the product.
The migration itself is the product. Ryan, that is a phenomenal conceptual reframe. I mean, think about a regular corporate software update. If a company forces everyone to switch from like Microsoft Office to Google Workspace, it is usually a week of pure misery.
Oh, the IT tickets are endless.
Lost files, angry employees, totally. Now multiply those stakes by 1,000. You are asking a small business owner to rip out a satellite dish that has reliably run their business for 2 decades and trust the invisible internet for their most profitable day of the week.
The terror that bar owner feels is very real. So the white glove service, the human onboarding, the customer support teams literally holding their hand through the installation, that seamlessness was the actual value proposition you were selling first. If you de-risk the customer's transition, you win their absolute loyalty. And this tees up one of the most important offensive soundbites you have in the entire playbook.
Yes, the 90-second rule. Ryan, when the moderator inevitably asks whatever Pass's core value proposition is, you do not talk about broadband delivery protocols. You do not talk about IP aggregation. You ground the technology in a visceral human reality.
You hit them with the line.
You deliver this exact line. We don't really sell games. We sell the bartender 90 seconds back at kickoff.
Let's analyze why that lands so perfectly in a room full of suits. It proves you understand the end user on a cellular level. At 12:59 p.m. on a Sunday, when 20 patrons are yelling their drink orders across the wood, the bartender doesn't care about the nuance of exclusive rights contracts.
They couldn't care less.
They care that they can hit one button, the game appears instantly, their panic subsides, and they can get back to pouring $8 beers. You aren't selling software. You're selling time and sanity.
And once you establish that trust, once you prove the anchor works on day one with NFL Sunday Ticket, then you can start building the breadth of the platform. The Playbook Notes Everpass is now pulling over 4,000 live events from various providers into that single interface. But Ryan, this opens you up to a massive defensive vulnerability, and I guarantee the skeptical moderator is going to attack you on it.
Oh, I'm absolutely coming for you on this one. Consider this the first truly hard pitch you are going to face on that stage.
Yeah.
So I'm the moderator, right? I lean forward and I say, Ryan, Everpass's entire marketing pitch is that you are building an open, aggregated ecosystem to cure the fragmentation of the streaming wars. But your biggest asset, your foundational pillar, is that you hold the exclusive commercial rights to NFL Sunday Ticket. You have built a monopoly in the most valuable property in sports. Isn't preaching an open ecosystem while guarding an exclusive walled garden a massive hypocritical contradiction?
Wow. I can feel the tension in the room just hearing that question.
Yeah.
It is the classic gotcha. But your playbook provides a brilliant structural reframe to disarm it completely. You do not get defensive. You separate the content from the delivery mechanism. The exact line you are coached to use, and you deliver this with absolute clarity, is exclusive on the rights, open on the platform.
Walk them through the mechanics of what that actually means, because Everpass holds the exclusive B2B rights to Sunday Ticket. If a casino wants that content, they legally must go through Everpass.
Right.
But crucially, Everpass does not lock down the physical hardware or the user interface just for its own content. You built an open operational layer. A bar owner uses the Everpass interface to pull in Sunday Ticket, yes, but they can use that exact same interface to pull in Thursday Night Football from Amazon, Friday Night Baseball from Apple, or a random soccer match from Peacock.
The analogy I love for this, and Ryan, feel free to use this in your back pocket if you need it, is the universal remote control. You didn't build a TV that only plays one channel. You built the ultimate universal remote control that also just happens to hold the exclusive keys to the biggest channel on Earth.
It's brilliant.
By doing this, you shift the primary valuation of your company. You aren't just a silo of premium content. You become the indispensable operating system that the venue relies on for every single screen all day, every day.
It is a masterful platform play, highly reminiscent of what you saw in the Disney platform seat. You make your software so vital for organizing the chaos of everything else that you become the default oxygen of the venue. The operator wins because they get one screen instead of a basket of sticky remotes, and Everpass wins because you become the permanent, unremovable layer between the content and the fan.
Okay, let's look at the broader strategic thesis. We've talked about de-risking the transition, taking care of the bartender, but what is the actual empirical proof that moving an entire industry off satellite and onto commercial streaming is genuinely better? Because, Ryan, you know the legacy media circles are still whispering that streaming is too fractured, too complicated, and that it actually shrinks the overall audience reach compared to the glory days of the dish.
Yeah, there's a lot of old school bias there.
A lot. So how do you counter that?
You destroy that conventional wisdom by pointing to the residential market as the leading indicator. You hit them with the killer statistic from the playbook. You say, when NFL Sunday Ticket moved from DirecTV to YouTube TV for residential consumers, it actually captured more subscribers in its very first season on broadband than it had in its final season on satellite.
That's incredible.
It didn't shrink. It immediately expanded.
And the profound realization here, the real aha moment for the audience, is that the ceiling was never the audience demand. The ceiling was the hardware.
Exactly. Think about the physical friction of a satellite dish. As we discussed, the truck rolls, the drilling, the weather interference,
yeah.
You get a bad storm and your signal is gone, the strict line of sight requirements, yeah. You have a tall building block, your southern sky. Too bad you can't get the channel.
Right, yeah.
That physical infrastructure inherently capped the total addressable market. But when you move to broadband, that physical friction evaporates.
Yeah.
If a business has an internet connection, they can access the content instantly. The market expands overnight because the hardware constraint has been completely vaporized.
And your entire strategy relies on mapping this residential phenomenon onto the commercial space. You are betting, correctly, that commercial behavior follows residential behavior, just delayed by a few years. By migrating venues to connected TVs, you know, smart TVs that don't require any proprietary set-top boxes or heavy installation, the potential universe of sports bars, cafes, and lounges that can share premium sports suddenly explodes.
It's a gold rush.
It is. You treat connected TV as a clearance pending, a tidal wave that is inevitably going to wash over the commercial sector. You don't fight it. You write it.
Which logically transitions us to the next phase of your prep, emerging leagues, and the ultimate fan funnel. Because once you own the screens and the hardware constraints are gone, what do you actually put on those displays?
Besides the NFL.
Right, besides the obvious anchors. This is the pivot from defense to offense. If you control the screens in tens of thousands of crowded rooms, you have the unprecedented power to manufacture culture.
Yeah, the playbook details a highly specific four-box checklist that you use to evaluate whether to put real financial backing and real estate behind an emerging league. Ryan, the audience is going to be hungry for actionable frameworks. They want to know how you pick winners. So let's rehearse the checklist, anchored right back to your days in the DirecTV buyer's seat.
Okay, box one, a concentrated, passionate fan base. You are not looking for a massive, shallow audience that kind of sort of likes a sport if nothing else is on. You want deep, rabid, concentrated passion. So if I am the moderator, I ask Ryan, give me an example of the difference.
And your answer should be the difference between surfing and UFC.
Okay, break that down.
Millions of people might watch a beautiful surfing clip on Instagram and hit like. It's visually stunning, it's broadly appealing, but they aren't going to drive to a bar at 10 p.m. to watch a two-hour surfing competition. The passion is an inch deep and a mile wide.
Right.
UFC fans, however, possess a concentrated passion. They will travel, they will pay $30 covers, they will stay for 3 hours and buy food and drinks. You want density of passion over breadth of casual interest.
Perfect. Box two. The sport must be genuinely better watched together. This is a non-negotiable filter for the out-of-home market. Certain sports are perfectly fine to watch alone on an iPad on your couch, golf maybe, but high-energy sports, combat sports, fast-paced emerging games like padel, they demand a crowd.
Yeah, the communal reaction is key.
It is. The groans, the cheers, the shared tension that is actually part of the product. The sport has to fundamentally benefit from being in a loud room.
Box three, a consistent, programmable calendar. This is pure operational reality, something you learn deeply at Disney when scheduling global feeds. A bar owner is a programmer. They need to know that every Thursday night at 8 p.m., there is a match they can build a drink special around.
Exactly.
If an emerging league has an erratic, unpredictable schedule that changes based on weather or venue availability, a bar cannot roster their staff or run local marketing around it. Reliability in scheduling is just as important as reliability in the tech stack.
Finally, box four, a league that treats commercial venues as an actual primary strategy, not a secondary afterthought. The league executives have to recognize that being in bars is vital to their grassroots growth. They need to proactively partner with you, the distributor, to create marketing materials for the venues rather than just cashing a massive residential rights check and completely ignoring the B2B market.
Yeah, that happens way too often. When an emerging sport hits all four of those boxes, Ryan, it is like pouring aviation fuel on a fire. Because with an aggregated cloud-based platform like EverPass, the day an emerging league signs a deal, they don't have to wait 5 years to build out physical distribution infrastructure.
No truck rolls.
No truck rolls. They instantly populate in the same user interface, on the exact same smart TVs right alongside the NFL and the Premier League. It provides them with massive overnight scale and immediate cultural legitimacy.
This connects directly to the demographic time bomb that every league is terrified of. Gen Z and the changing nature of fandom. The playbook spends significant time here, and it is a topic the panel will certainly cover. We know the younger fans discover content on their phones. It's an entirely algorithmic existence. Short form video, TikTok highlights, Instagram reels.
But Ryan, you have to hit them with this vital distinction. The line is, discovery is not devotion.
Ooh, say that again.
Discovery is not devotion. An algorithm can force a 15-second highlight of an insane table tennis rally into a teenager's feed. They might think it's incredible and share it with their friends. That is discovery. But that absolutely does not mean they are going to pull out a credit card, subscribe to a niche streaming service, and sit on their couch in silence for 2 hours to watch a full tournament.
Not a chance.
The friction required to move from a free 15-second clip to a 2-hour solo commitment is a chasm that most emerging leagues die trying to cross.
So where does the devotion actually happen? Where does the conversion take place? It happens in the room. It happens when that same young fan walks into a packed sports bar on a Friday night with their friends, and that table tennis match is playing on the 80-inch screen above the bar, and they experience the physical energy of a live crowd reacting to the speed of the game. The physical venue is where algorithmic casual interest is forged into real, durable fandom.
I want you to conceptualize the commercial venue as the physical world's ultimate onboarding funnel. Think about the marketing ROI of that for a lead. It reduces the friction of fandom to zero. The fan doesn't have to sign up for a free trial. They don't have to remember a password. They don't have to download a new app on their TV.
They literally just walk through a door.
They simply walk into a room to eat wings with their friends, and the sport is already there, fully immersive, surrounded by social validation. It is the single most valuable unowned line item in a sports league's marketing budget. And you, Ryan, hold the keys to that funnel.
This demographic shift completely alters the economic pricing models of rights, too. For decades, the industry operated on the trophy premium. You pay billions of dollars to own the exclusive rights to one massive marquee property, the ultimate trophy, and you build a moat around it. It is a massive concentration of capital and risk.
But younger audiences don't consume sports like that. They are deeply fragmented. A 22-year-old might follow a specific NBA player, a certain UFC fighter, a niche European soccer club, and, like, an esports team.
Right, they follow the athlete, not the league.
Exactly. To capture that fan, a venue cannot rely on a single trophy. They need a portfolio premium. They need a broad, curated presence across a huge variety of sports. Breadth and curation become exponentially more valuable than deep exclusivity in one vertical, which, again, totally validates the architecture of Everpass as an open, aggregated platform holding 4,000 events.
Let's shift gears to Section 5 of your playbook, the rest of the world. Borderless distribution. If the broadband model is working in the U.S., if the hardware constraints are gone and the fan funnel is operating, what is stopping you from going global tomorrow? Technologically, the internet is inherently borderless. A gigabit connection in Denver functions the exact same way as a gigabit connection in Dublin.
Right. No one is shipping physical satellite dishes across the Atlantic Ocean.
The technology scales infinitely and instantly. But the expansion is handcuffed by what the playbook refers to as paper, the legal contracts. Ryan, having run global distribution at Disney, you understand this friction better than anyone in the room. I want you to use the train track gauge metaphor here to explain territorial rights to the audience.
Yes, the train track metaphor is fantastic. Explain that trying to broadcast a single sport globally right now is like trying to run a high-speed train across Europe, but every single country, and sometimes every single county, uses a different width of train track. The commercial rights for live sports are a shattered mosaic. They are carved up country by country, territory by territory, and often sport by sport.
It's a mess.
And to make matters worse, the out-of-home commercial rights are almost always treated as a forgotten afterthought, bundled clumsily into massive residential packages by executives who don't understand the B2B market at all.
So you could theoretically build the perfect streaming platform, flip a switch in your server room, and deliver a pristine 4K feed to a pub in London tomorrow morning. But legally, you would be violating a dozen different territorial contracts that were written 6 years ago. A global distribution deal isn't one handshake. It is 30 different agonizing legal untanglings that just happen to share a corporate logo. The constraint on global expansion isn't the cloud infrastructure. It is the slow, painstaking human process of rewriting the paper.
Which brings us to the most delicate psychological element of your panel prep, the diplomacy of deal making. To untangle that paper globally, to execute a massive industry takeover, to replace legacy hardware with your new platform, you are inevitably going to disrupt massive, deeply entrenched corporations. You're taking their revenue.
You're eating their lunch.
You are. Ryan, we need to talk about the DirecTV doctrine. You literally took the crown jewel of commercial sports rights, NFL Sunday Ticket, away from DirecTV, the company where you started your career. For 30 years, DirecTV was the out-of-home sports business, and Everpass swooped in and took it. It is human nature to want to take a victory lap.
Oh, absolutely. And the moderator is absolutely going to try and bait you into talking trash, or at least gloating about how outdated satellite technology is. I will look at you on that stage and ask, Ryan, DirecTV dominated this space for 30 years, and you just effectively made their commercial division obsolete. Is the satellite dish finally dead?
And you must resist every urge to spike the football. Your prep document strictly forbids any triumphalism. The mandate is strict, unyielding graciousness.
So what's the line here? How do you defuse that bomb?
Here is the exact line you are coached to deliver. Memorize the cadence of this. You look the moderator in the eye, you lower your volume slightly to draw them in, and you say, the dish did its job for a generation. The venue just doesn't need the dish anymore.
Wow. It is the perfect corporate statement. It honors the history, it validates the work of the people who built the legacy infrastructure, but it firmly and irrevocably closes the door on the past in the exact same breath. You don't attack the old model. You simply explain that the market naturally evolved past it.
But let's dig into the why. Why is this grace so critical? Why not publicly celebrate a massive competitive victory? Because, Ryan, having sat in the three chairs, you know that in a massive B2B platform shift, burning bridges is a catastrophic strategic error. The universe of media rights is incredibly small. The people you humiliate today might be the exact people you need to partner with tomorrow to untangle those international rights we just discussed.
Precisely. Sorry, I mean, I look at it this way. If you publicly attack a legacy player, you create emotional friction. You bruise egos. And bruise egos stall deals. Mm. The strategy you employ is to project absolute inevitability, not aggression. You want the legacy players to look at Everpass not as an attacking enemy, but as the inevitable next phase of the industry that they should probably figure out how to partner with. Empathy for the executive across the table becomes your most lethal negotiating tactic.
That's brilliant. All right, we are coming to the end of our prep session. Let's do a quick green room checklist. When you are standing backstage in Denver, drinking a bottle of water, waiting for them to call your name, I want you to run through these strict guardrails in your head one last time.
Okay, let's run them. Number one, stay gracious on DirecTV. Zero triumphalism. Number two, hold the international stage ceiling. Acknowledge the paper constraint. Don't overpromise a global launch timeline. Number three, do not under any circumstances state specific pricing models or dollar figures. You speak in frameworks, not invoices.
Number four, treat connected TV as a clearance pending. It is happening. It is inevitable. Ride the wave.
And finally, anchor every single answer to your career arc. If they ask about tech, answer like a buyer. If they ask about rights, answer like a platform distributor. You have the ultimate edge because almost no one else on that stage has sat in all three chairs.
Before we wrap, Ryan, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over. Something that isn't explicitly spelled out in your playbook, it represents the logical endgame of everything you are building. It is a thought you can use to close your panel and leave the room buzzing.
Yeah, think about the physical design of our communities. For a century, we have thought of sports bars or stadiums as highly dedicated, specialized venues. They required massive capital investment, specialized hardware, and expensive commercial licenses. But if Everpass completely removes the hardware constraint and smooths out the licensing friction, well, what happens?
What happens when any screen connected to broadband can instantly, legally, become a commercial sports hub? Will a local laundromat throw up a smart TV, click the Everpass app, and legally broadcast a massive pay-per-view UFC fight to turn a boring Friday night into a profitable community event?
Or independent coffee shops. Will they seamlessly transform into impromptu Premier League pubs for 3 hours on a Saturday morning, pulling in a completely new demographic, and then transition right back to serving lattes?
It completely changes the geometry of local businesses.
Could public transit hubs or city parks or hotel lobbies become dynamic communal sports arenas just by turning on a screen? Ryan, the stadium of the future might not be a billion-dollar concrete dome funded by taxpayers. The stadium of the future might just be wherever fans happen to be standing, looking at a screen, together. You aren't just fixing the streaming wars. By solving that sweaty bartender's problem, you are fundamentally changing how human beings gather in physical spaces. Keep that vision in your head when you walk onto that stage. You're going to crush it.